Good evening to you all. We thought we'd got here early, before 7:30, but there was a whole group of folk from far away Long Crendon, and they were already here, waiting, so enthusiastic. My name's Gordon Kurt. I'm a retired minister and an associate minister here in this benefice, living here in Haddenham, but our rector has a whole cluster of parishes. And this evening, we not only welcome people from all those six parishes, but from rural Long Crendon, from Aylesbury, from Tame, and all sorts of other places. We won't go through a roll call, but we hope you really enjoy this evening. You're most welcome to this church, which has been here for many years before the great events that we're going to think about this evening. On this very day, 500 years ago, it is thought that Dr. Martin Luther nailed his 95 theses, or basis for argumentation, on the castle door in the Church of Wittenberg. Well, there's some debate about it, but it's this date that's been celebrated ever since. Now, not many of you were around for the 400th anniversary, and not many of us are expecting to be around for the 600th anniversary. So today's remembrance is very, very significant. Martin Luther and the Reformation. It's a tricky subject. You see, if you're a theologian like me and you gave a talk on this subject, there would bound to be historians in the audience who'd say, but what about this? What about that? Historical questions. And I would be out of my depth. On the other hand, if we invited a historian to give the lecture, the theologians, probably including me, would say, but what about this theological point and that theological point? Have you really got the balance right? And so, after the rector had invited me to do this evening, I suddenly got cold feet. I don't often get cold feet, but I did. And I thought to myself, if I've got a son who studied history at Manchester and theology at Oxford, he should carry both the historians and the theologians together. And that's why Stephen is here this evening. Although he asked me to say that really he's an amateur on this subject. After graduating, he was a school teacher for quite a number of years in South London, in Croydon, teaching in both disciplines of religious education and his European history. Then he turned his collar around, although he's not wearing it tonight, and he's been a vicar now for, is it 10 years? He's an author of several booklets, but also a groundbreaking book introducing you to the theology of the famous Bishop Tom Wright, who was Bishop of Durham and has now gone back to academia. So he'll be speaking for as long as he wants, and the programme goes like this. He'll speak, and then after that, I will just give out a few announcements. We'll have a very short break, and then there'll be an opportunity for any questions and brief comments from the floor, and then back to Stephen if he wants to answer them or contribute to them. And we will complete the evening at 9:30. Does that sound all right? So will you join with me in welcoming our guest speaker?
Well, thank you very, very much for that warm welcome. That's a bit of a build-up, isn't it? I'm slightly nervous. Now, I want a bit of honesty at the start, okay? Hands up who is here because they wanted to avoid trick-or-treaters calling at their... I'm sure there's some of you. I'm sure there's some out there who've thought, I've got to get out tonight. It doesn't matter what the reason is. I will go down to that church and listen to that talk. Well, when most people today hear the name Martin Luther, this is the person that they think of. Martin Luther King, the American civil rights campaigner from the middle of the 20th century. But of course, this talk this evening isn't about Martin Luther King. It's about the man that he was named after, Martin Luther, the 16th century reformer, the man whose thought and actions really brought about the most dramatic and significant changes ever seen within the Christian faith. So who was this man who turned Christianity, and in the process, Europe, and indeed the whole world, upside down? And what was it that he came to believe and proclaim that brought this about? Well, Martin Luther was from Germany, and unlike nations like France, Spain, or England, Germany in the 16th century wasn't the united nation that it later became. It was a collection of hundreds of states, some of them really tiny and loosely gathered together in what was known as the Holy Roman Empire. Whoops. There it is. The Holy Roman Empire. And this political factor was to prove vital for the development of the Reformation. And it was within one of the larger states in the Holy Roman Empire, Electoral Saxony, that Luther was born. He was born on the 10th of November 1483. He was born in the town of Eisleben, a small town, and he was the second child of Hans and Margaret Luder. That was the name, the way that their surname was pronounced at that stage. And he was given the Christian name that he had because he was born on St. Martin's Day. And Luther's father, Hans, was a businessman. He was seeking to make his fortune in copper. And within a year, for that reason, the family had moved to another town called Mansfeld, and Hans gained part ownership of a number of copper mines in that town. And like a lot of self-made men, and perhaps there are one or two in the audience this evening, like a lot of self-made men, Luther's father really wanted the most for his children. Particularly once Martin showed academic potential. And this is what's going to prove a little bit explosive in what happens in just a moment. Because his father invested a great deal in his son's education. Seeing his potential, he packed him off to school in a place called Magdeburg, 40 miles away, and then transferred him to live in Eisenach for a better school there. And at the age of 19, Martin Luther began his university education in the city of Erfurt. Now, that stage in history, the process for a university education was for most students to gain a general education in what were known as the liberal arts, before, if you were good enough, then going on to specialise. And you generally specialise in law or medicine or theology. And the plan, once Martin Luther graduated as a Master of Arts in February 1505, certainly in the mind of his father, was for young Martin to study law. And he was enrolled on the course. His father had paid for the expensive textbooks, and all was ready to go when an event occurred which changed the life of Martin Luther forever. It was the 2nd of July, 1505, and Martin Luther had just had a brief trip home to see his parents, and he was returning from Mansfeld to Erfurt when, near the village of Stottenheim, he was suddenly caught in a violent thunderstorm. Now, at that time, sudden death was regarded as a particular sign of God's judgment. If you were suddenly killed, then it must be because you'd done something wrong in God's sight. And when a bolt of lightning suddenly knocked Martin Luther to the ground, Luther cried out in utter panic these words, which changed his life forever. Because what he cried out was, "Blessed St. Anne, I will become a monk." Now, Martin Luther survived the storm. He completed his journey to Erfurt. But just 2 weeks later, on the 17th of July, having cancelled his registration on the law course, having sold the expensive textbooks that his father had bought, I've never been able to find out whether his dad got his money back or not, and having had dinner with his friends the night before, Luther then walked the short distance from his hostel to this place, to the door of the Order of Observant Augustinian Friars, also in Erfurt, and he began the process of becoming a monk. Now, Hans, his father, was absolutely furious at his son's decision, and particularly angry at his son's failure to consult him. But Martin Luther was utterly convinced that he'd made the right decision. And that decision was based, seemingly in its entirety, on Luther's desperation to secure his standing before God. The young Martin Luther was someone who was sociable, and he was musical, and he was popular. But long before that thunderstorm, he was also unusually scrupulous in terms of his conscience and his fear of God's judgment. And this was something, actually, that continued throughout his life, this tendency towards spiritual despair, or Anfechtungen, as he called it, afflicted him. And so joining a religious order and dedicating his entire life to God, particularly within an order as strict as the observant Augustinians, was really all about securing the salvation that he was desperate for. And this became Martin Luther's life over the next decade, as he continued to live in the friary at Erfurt, and he observed this ultra-strict life of the Augustinians. 6 hours a day spent in church. Can you imagine? 6 hours a day praying the 7 daily services, and then there was fasting, and there was working, and there was begging, because that was how the Augustinians, as a mendicant order, gained their food. Meals were eaten in silence twice a day, except during Advent and Lent, when they got a treat, they got to eat just once. And they ate in silence, as I say, and most of the time were in the freezing cold of a monastery where only one single room was heated. The Mass, the Holy Communion, was central to their daily worship. And once a week, the friars were also encouraged to confess their sins and then receive the penance that they were given as a punishment. But even within this context, even within this ultra-strict environment, Luther quickly gained a reputation amongst his fellow friars of doing everything to the nth degree. So there are stories of Martin Luther fasting way beyond the times that were actually stipulated because he was so determined to have his soul in the right place before God. There are also stories of him sleeping out in the snow, can you believe it? In a desperate attempt to mortify his sins and his fellow friars coming out and dragging him in against his will. But perhaps the most extreme example of Martin Luther's mindset at this time were the marathon sessions that he would apparently spend in confession. Martin Luther's confessor was a man called von Staupitz. He was the vicar general of the order. And Luther would apparently utterly exhaust von Staupitz through these endless sessions where he'd be determined to hunt out and confess the most minute and tiny sins to his confessor. And what would happen is they'd think they'd finished after several hours, and Martin Luther would walk out and go down the corridor, and suddenly it would occur to him some of the sins that he had confessed. So he'd rush back in and insist on beginning all over again. Must have been quite a trial for von Staupitz. And he was also ordained as a priest in this period as well. He was ordained at Erfurt Cathedral in April 1507, and that added pastoral responsibilities, which were going to go on and be really quite crucial, to his life as a monk. But the most crucial development that happened in these years was when von Staupitz directed Luther or instructed him into a greater study of theology. Now, education was really important to the Augustinians. But when von Staupitz, and here's a picture of him, when von Staupitz took this decision, his primary aim wasn't so much developing education through the Augustinian order. His primary aim was pastoral. What he wanted to do was to shift Martin Luther away from this utter obsession he had with the condition of his own heart and was he good enough for God. He wanted to shift him into focusing on what God had done for him in Jesus Christ. Now, Staupitz himself never became a Protestant, but his role was so crucial that Martin Luther later said these words about him. He said, "If it hadn't been for Dr. Staupitz, I would have sunk into hell." And after 3 years of intensive theological study at Erfurt, Staupitz transferred Luther to a new university in the city of Wittenberg. Wittenberg was the capital of Electoral Saxony. And it was here, as Martin Luther taught the Bible at the theology faculty from 1512, that the ideas began to gradually take shape that eventually led to the momentous break with Rome. And it centered upon Martin Luther's gradual discovery that the theology that he'd been trained in, the theology that he had completely imbibed, was, in his opinion, completely wrong on the issue that mattered most, the doctrine of how an individual was saved or rescued by God. Now, medieval theology wasn't monolithic, and there have been various disputes during the Middle Ages about how access to God's grace could be gained. But by Luther's day, the view that dominated was one that argued that if a sinner did what lay within them, God would not deny them his grace. So salvation, being rescued by God, according to this theology, it was overwhelmingly brought about by God's grace, but the vital process towards humans receiving that grace was through them making the right level, whatever that was, of contrition or moral effort, which God would then complete by the infusion into that person of his grace. And this was the theology that undergirded the whole penitential system of the medieval church, with its process of people constantly going to confession, being forgiven, entering a state of grace after they'd performed their acts of penance, carrying on life, then sinning again, then going back to confession, and so on. That was the theology that underpinned it. And it was also, crucially, the theology that lay at the root of all of Martin Luther's struggles, his depression, and his anxiety. Because that was really all focused on whether he had done enough, really done enough, to receive God's grace. And there were really two distinct movements that eventually took Martin Luther away from this understanding. The very first book that Martin Luther lectured on at Wittenberg to the students were the Psalms. You might be familiar with the Psalms from the Old Testament in the Bible. There's 150 of them. Now, the notes from these lectures still survive. We're incredibly well informed about stuff from this point on in Luther's life. There's, compared to other historical periods where so much is lost, there's so much that's preserved, including all of Martin Luther's lectures and very often the notes of the students who attended them. And within these lectures, from the early stages of Luther's lecturing on the Psalms, what we start to see is what became known as Luther's theology of the cross. So when we read these lectures and when we study them, we still see at this stage quite a bit within them emphasizing to the students about it's about doing what lies within you in order to receive God's grace. But increasingly, we see that alongside another emphasis. As Luther identified or started to identify his own anguish with that of the psalmists. If you've ever read the Psalms in the Bible, you'll know that they're full of people pouring out their anguish and despair towards God. And Martin Luther, as he lectured on these Psalms, identified his anguish and his spiritual despair with what the writers of these Psalms were clearly going through. And what he started to understand was that this was actually a work of God. This was, in Martin Luther's growing opinion, God's work of bringing sinners to a point where they knew that they had nothing to offer him. And it's called Luther's theology of the cross because he understood or started to understand the death of Jesus as God's characteristic way of working, bringing people to an apparent devastating defeat, which he described as God's strange or alien work, in order to then bring about God's proper work of rescuing them. And it was this that started to resolve Martin Luther's struggles. Because that self-accusation and that despair that he felt, that moved from being, in his opinion, originally a sign that he can't have received God's grace, that started to shift into, in his opinion, being the only qualification for receiving God's grace. Rather than being a positive virtue, Martin Luther started to see humility as now simply the total absence of self-confidence, not believing that you had anything to bring at all before God and entirely relying on him. And this was the expression that put it into words for him. God, he said, only saves sinners, only teaches the stupid, only enriches the poor, only raises the dead. So that was a really crucial step for Luther in shifting from this understanding of the Christian faith, which caused him so much anguish. But an even more important development, sometime after this, is the one that's normally referred to as Luther's Reformation breakthrough. Now, scholars still debate when precisely this took place. There's stacks and stacks of evidence, as I said earlier, but in some ways that's just fueled more and more debate about when this precise moment was. But what isn't in doubt was that it centered on Luther reaching a very different understanding of this particular verse from the Bible. Romans chapter 1, verse 17. And it's reference to the gospel, or good news, revealing the righteousness of God. Now, up to this point, Martin Luther, like other theologians, had understood the righteousness of God to refer to the justice of God, the impartiality of God, the way that God would bring about his judgment. And Martin Luther later admitted that he hated this phrase when he heard it. He absolutely loathed it. It haunted him because it conveyed to him the sense of a God with an impossible standard that Christians had to reach and who he'd damn if they didn't. And Martin Luther later said he just couldn't see how in any way this could be good news. But Martin Luther's breakthrough came when he suddenly realized that rather than referring to a divine quality, the righteousness of God instead, in his opinion, had a passive meaning. It referred to the righteousness that God granted to sinners as a totally free gift. The gospel, or good news for Martin Luther, was found, he discovered, in abandoning any attempt to be justified or declared righteous on the basis of good works, such as prayers and acts of contrition, and recognizing that justification, being acquitted or forgiven by God, was found simply in taking him at his word and placing our faith or trust in him. And that's why the key phrase that you'll hear time and again connected with Martin Luther is this one, justification by faith. That's the summary of the entire theological position that Martin Luther moved to. And it was a discovery that totally transformed him. It transformed Martin Luther because it transformed his understanding of God. God moved from being, in his view, a demanding, oppressive, condemning tyrant to being a God who was utterly generous, utterly good, and utterly big-hearted. And this is the way Martin Luther summed it up, this discovery, this breakthrough that he'd made. He said, "Here I thought I was altogether born again and had entered paradise." And from this point on, Martin Luther then had to rethink all of his theology in the light of this breakthrough. He'd had years of training, years of theological sort of input. And now, in the light of this breakthrough, he had to look at everything through a different lens, and that's what he did. So within a short space of time, and we see this in his lectures, he was speaking about God's righteousness, what he now understood as this gift that God gives, rather than this abstract quality of God. He was talking about it being imputed rather than imparted to believers and remaining alien to them. Now, those are rather technical sort of jargon-type terms. But what he was talking about was that this covered people rather than entered into them. And that's because Martin Luther was so concerned to safeguard against moral or spiritual development being seen as an indication of righteousness. God's righteousness, as I say, according to Luther, covered rather than entered a believer. And that meant that this was true. Under the medieval system, the penitential system of going to confession and then being forgiven, you were a sinner until you went to confession, then you were absolved, you were in a state of grace until you sinned again, and then you'd have to go back. So it was one and then the other and then the other and back and forth. And what Martin Luther said was that believers were at the same time righteous and sinful. Simul justus et peccata. Because though they remained sinful, God's grace was now covering them, meaning that they were forgiven. Now, the obvious question from all this is, what is the role of good works in the Christian life? Acts of holiness, acts of goodness, and so on. Well, what Martin Luther said was that they were an entirely appropriate response to God's grace, and they were a work of the Holy Spirit. But he also said this. He said it was totally fatal to confuse them with justification, for them to have anything to do with being acquitted by God. Because if that was emphasized, Martin Luther said, that would lead people straight back into attempts at self-righteousness, trying to earn their way to God. The law contained in the Bible, all those instructions, not just in the Old Testament, but in the New Testament, things like the Sermon on the Mount, that had, for Martin Luther, two essentially negative roles. First, it was there to guide secular rulers in how to order society and to restrain human wickedness. And secondly, the laws contained in the Bible, they were simply there to convict people of their plight before God. They weren't meant to read those instructions and think they were a mandate for how they should live. They were meant to read those instructions to then realize they could never live up to those standards and then throw themselves upon God's mercy and receive forgiveness. Now, Martin Luther said that once God's salvation was received by faith, good works would then happen spontaneously. And completely unrelated to the laws contained in the Bible, because what Martin Luther said was that when people received that complete assurance of God's forgiveness because of what he'd done and nothing to do with them, it would then lead them into genuine acts of love towards other people, rather than inward-looking acts to try and make sure people were righteous before God. So he saw this as leading to people actually having much more genuine love towards others because they weren't doing it with any motive of being forgiven or accepted by God. Well, within a short space of time, Luther had won his colleagues at Wittenberg over to his way of thinking. Some of them weren't quite sure at first, but eventually the whole of the theology faculty was won over. But for the moment, this remained a theological development within a fairly obscure German university. What changed that? Well, what changed the situation, and what brought Martin Luther's theology into public prominence was the controversy that soon erupted in 1517, 500 years ago, over what were known as indulgences. Now, what were indulgences? Well, indulgences were originally an alternative to punishments given by the church, but by the latter half of the 15th century, they had become financial payments to remit time in purgatory. Now, what was purgatory? Well, purgatory was the place where most Christians were understood to go after death to be purged of their sins. If you were one of the saints, if you were very, very holy and had led a blameless life, you went straight to heaven. People who were sort of beyond the pale, they went to hell. But most Christians went to purgatory. And this is the place where you went to be purged of your sins so you would one day be ready for heaven. And indulgences were sold so that people could have time off from purgatory. And the logic of this, or the basis of it, was in the idea that the saints, those who had been particularly holy and made their way straight to heaven, they had done enough good works to build up what was known as a treasury of merit, an abundance of merit which could then be tapped into. You could receive some of this, usually for your deceased relatives who were in purgatory, by the payment of some money. And you'd receive an indulgence certificate that would say that you'd been released or your loved ones had been released from purgatory. Now, this became a particularly big issue in Germany at this time through a secret deal. And the secret deal was done between Pope Leo X, he was Pope at the time, and he made this deal with Albrecht of Brandenburg. Now, Pope Leo was really keen to build St. Peter's Basilica in Rome. Has anyone ever visited Rome? Yeah, a few people seen that, St. Peter's Basilica. Impressive building, yeah. And Leo was keen to build that. And Albrecht, well, he was keen to add a third archbishopric to the two that he already possessed. And the financial deal that the two of them came up with to sort this, it involved a special indulgence. And this indulgence was granted to territories that were under the control of Albrecht, and him and the Pope would then split the proceeds from the money that came in. That was the deal that they came up with. And the agent that they used to sell the indulgence was a man called Johann Tetzel. And he travelled about in Albrecht's territories, aggressively promoting the sale of this indulgence, and he used this famous catchphrase: as soon as the coin in the money box rings, the soul direct from purgatory springs. Do you think that would be pretty convincing? We're a bit low at my church on sort of fundraising at the moment. I'm wondering whether, you know, to introduce indulgences. I'm only joking. Now, Tetzel wasn't allowed to do this outside Albrecht's territories. So he wasn't allowed to do it in Saxony. But Luther did encounter people coming back to Wittenberg who had been through these territories, and they were coming back clutching their indulgence certificate, full of gratitude that they'd received for their relatives or whoever it was, this remission from purgatory. And remember what I said earlier, Martin Luther by this stage is a pastor. He is pastorally responsible for the people under him as a priest. And this really, really concerns him. And the result of this were what we know as the 95 Theses.